and welcome to the audio choke here at MMATorch.com. We'd appreciate you to leave a comment, go to the forum, ask us any questions whatsoever. I'm Matt Collins.
I'm Greg Rowland.
And do what Frank Shamrock does. Follow us on Twitter.
We're at Audio Choke.
All right, so today we're going to be delving into a in-depth discussion of UFC 108, which is going to be this Saturday via pay-per-view. But first, let's go into some Josh Koscheck news.
Yeah, Josh Koscheck was supposed to fight Paulo Thiago at UFC 109, and unfortunately had to pull out due to an injury he just announced earlier today.
Yes, and today being, the 28th.
Yes, Monday.
Yes, of December. And no word yet on what the injury is, but he's out.
Yeah, he says that he's not going to be out for too terribly long. He's hoping to be training full-time again in a couple weeks. But clearly that's going to be long enough that he's going to have to pull out of his rematch against Paulo Thiago, which is a bummer. That was a big upset when Paulo Thiago, who was really an unknown guy, I mean, most people had never heard of him before, and Koscheck wasn't like the top guy, but he was certainly up there. He was in most people's top five for welterweight, and he got knocked out. And, you know, Paulo Thiago has looked good since then, but he hasn't looked great since then. So I think a lot of people were looking at this as Josh Koscheck's chance for revenge. And
those fights are usually some of the best ones, too.
Yeah, and it's also good to see guys that are going to be title contenders not having losses on their record that are unavenged. Like when Chuck Liddell won his title, the first handful of fights he did were just revenge fights. You know, he fought Couture, actually, which was a revenge fight. He lost to Randy Couture, but then he fought Jeremy Horn also, which was avenging a previous loss. And he tried to avenge his loss to the Rampage, which would have been the last one, but that didn't go his way. But anyway, back to Josh Koscheck and Paulo Thiago. Josh Koscheck is out, and it looks like his teammate and former fellow Ultimate Fighter 1 competitor, mm-hmm. Mike Swick, will be replacing him. That's not set in stone yet, but I think that would be a good replacement.
Yeah, and you were talking a little earlier about the log jammings between these two gentlemen and then John Fitch, who's also in the mix, that they're all part of the same camp and they're never going to fight each other.
That's right. All three of the guys are with AKA, American Kickboxing Academy, and it's kind of weird where the UFC has a deal now. Their top eight or so fighters at welterweight, three of them are in the same camp and aren't looking to fight each other, so they're really needing to sneak guys like Dan Hardy in there who, you know, won't be caught in that. That
yeah.
could possibly be one of the reasons why he got a title shot early, is because he's not affiliated with that camp.
Hmm. All right, a Strikeforce card for April. Looks like that Dan Henderson's going to go up against Jake Shields. Any thoughts on that match?
We had talked about this before. This is a fight that I think Dan Henderson should win. The only problem with that is he gets a little heavy with his hands sometimes and forgets how good of a wrestler he is, which helps him get great knockouts like the one he had on Michael Bisping, but at the same time, he gets taken down more than a wrestler of his caliber should, and Jake Shields is a guy who can do that. So I wouldn't go so far as to say that Jake Shields should win this fight, but I would not be terribly surprised if he pulled it out of his ass and, you know, pulled an upset off here and won the fight by decision.
And more than anything, I think Dan Henderson needs that win, you know, just coming over from UFC into Strikeforce, and he really needs to assert some sort of dominance if the match that everybody wants to see, him and Fedor, is ever going to happen.
Yeah, well, Dan Henderson is certainly top three at middleweight in the world. I mean, it's basically Anderson Silva, and then you can go with either Dan Henderson or Nate Marquardt. So Dan Henderson should win this fight. He's definitely, like, in terms of rankings, he's the guy, and he's going to be coming in there, if Strikeforce knows what they're doing at all, he's going to come in there with a whirlwind of hype, and he needs to deliver. It's going to be his first time on basic television. It's not going to be cable, and you know, that's exactly what he wanted. That was one of the things he said when he left the UFC, is that he wanted to be on CBS. And I think that any fighter should want that. So this is his time to shine. So hopefully he doesn't go and blow it. Because He has, in the past, sometimes lost fights that he should have won just because he gets trigger-happy.
All right, also come into CBS in April with Strikeforce. Verdum and Fedor going head-to-head.
Yeah, this is a fight that I'm a little less excited to see. Just because, I mean, I love Fedor. I love seeing Fedor fight, but I really don't see how Fabricio Verdum is going to win this one. He is an outstanding jiu-jitsu guy, but I just see him getting knocked out before it ever goes to the ground. And even as great of a jiu-jitsu guy as he is, that's never stopped Fedor before. You know, he was on the ground for two whole fights almost with Nogueira and managed to dominate him. And I don't think Verdum has near the chin that Nogueira has also, as he's been knocked out. So, you know, I mean, it's cool to see Fedor in action, and he's going to be on CBS again, so that's cool. But as far as, like, excitement, like, could this fight go the other way? He has the submission chance, but, you know, the puncher's chance is more of a chance than the jiu-jitsu chance, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, you're inside the audio choke with Greg Rowland, myself, Matt Collins. Our cohort, Tobin Shelby, is on holiday. UFC 108 this Saturday, January 2nd. Going to go run down some of the card here. The preliminary card, which is going to air on Spike TV. Let's start with Dan Lozon versus Cole Miller.
Yes, that is Dan Lozon, who is brother with the more famous Joe Lozon.
Also on this card for this pay-per-view.
That's right, the brothers will be fighting. And he's going to be fighting Cole Miller, who was on Season 5 of The Ultimate Fighter, with Dan's brother. So there may be a little bit of bad blood there.
Oh, wow.
This is really not a fight that I can comment a whole lot about. I don't really know a whole lot about Dan Lozon, to be honest, other than the fact that he's got a much more famous brother.
And does anybody really? I mean, this could be one of our the public's first chance to really see him in action.
I think he's fought in the UFC before, but he's not really been highlighted as of yet. So hopefully we'll get to see some good things from him.
Yeah, I mean, he's still fighting on Spike TV January 2nd. All right, now it's time to go to the man-on-man action. Martin Kampmann versus Jacob Volkmann.
Yeah, this is a fight that Martin Kampmann, I think, is probably expected to win. He was looking at a title shot here a little bit ago until the UFC's plans got all kinds of messed up. He was supposed to fight Mike Swick for the number one contendership to George St. Pierre's title, but then that fight got canceled. I forget who got injured first, but Martin Kampmann ended up fighting Paul Daly, and Mike Swick ended up fighting Dan Hardy, and out of this whole mess, Dan Hardy ended up with a title shot. Martin Kampmann fought Paul Daly, and he did lose. It was a knockout, technically speaking, but he wasn't knocked out. We touched on this a little bit last week. It was a little bit early of a stoppage, but, you know, like, he was getting beat up. I would like to see him pull something off there, though. He's a really well-rounded fighter. He's got knockouts and submissions, so I think he should probably take Jacob Volkmann out.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. What do you have any predictions for this one? Perhaps a submission in round two? Knockout power going on?
You know, I have a hard time predicting with Kampmann because he's so well-rounded. Like when he fought Drew McFedries, he was looking for the standing knockout until he felt McFedries' power, and then all of a sudden he's like, you know what, this is not the best idea. I think I'm going to take this to the ground. Which, you know, that sounds like mixed martial arts 101. But most fighters don't do that very well. They'll come in there with a game plan, and if their game plan doesn't work, they might have a plan B, but, you know, usually their plan B doesn't end up working out nearly as well as their plan A would have. It seems like a lot of times the more you change your game plan, the more you fail, and Martin Kampmann has proved that he actually, you know, he can go wherever the fight takes him. And he had a really exciting fight also with Carlos Condit, I think it was, this spring. And those two were just going all out. They were fighting everywhere, I believe. Martin Kampmann got the nod. It's a close fight, but he's a fun fighter to watch, and I think this is going to be a fun fight, so I'm looking forward to that one.
You're inside the audio choke at Twitter, also at Facebook. We have a Facebook page. Please fan us or become friends, you know, just get the community started. Also, if there's ever any concerns, questions, some positive input for Tobin Shelby, well, please direct those to the comment section below or at our forum here at MMATorch.com. Moving on to the main card, Gilbert Ivel, Greg's favorite fighter, against Junior Dos Santos.
Yeah, I'm hoping to see
Junior Dos. You just want Gilbert die.
Oh, well,
I mean, not die, but...
I think death is a little bit harsh, but, you know, like a mild coma, if there is such a thing. Yeah, I'd like to see him get knocked out handedly. He could get submitted, but I've never seen Junior Dos Santos take it to the ground. But Gilbert Ivel is really not known for having any kind of ground game. He's known for his kicks, and he's got a lot of kicks and knockouts. For all the bad things that I've said over him over the past few weeks, he is an outstanding fighter, and he can pull this one off, most certainly. But I'm certainly hoping to see Dos Santos win, and if I were to make a prediction, I would probably say it's going to be a decision or perhaps a late TKO by Dos Santos, perhaps third round, because while Gilbert Ivel is good, I don't think that he is going to be as good as Junior Dos Santos, and... you know, if everything we've seen of Dos Santos is accurate, because we haven't really seen him a whole lot yet. We've seen him 3 fights in the UFC, and 2 of them were pretty quick. His one with Krokop was a lot longer. That went to the third round. But also, Krokop's been declining somewhat, so it's hard to get kind of an accurate reading. I think Dos Santos has looked really good, but this will be a big check for him if this fight stays standing. If his fight goes to the ground, then it will be a lot less of a test because Ivel's, you know, he's kind of like Chet Congo in that he might survive for a while on the ground, but he offers no threat and you can put him away pretty easily.
What do you think it's this match on the main card? Well, Martin Kampmann, a man who was in the running for a championship bout, is on Spike TV, which is nothing wrong with that, but.
Well, there's a couple of factors in there. One is that this is 2 knockout guys going at it, and you know fans are going to pay for the knockouts over well-rounded fighters, which is sad, but it's true. Fans love to see guys like Tank Abbott, who he's not a mixed martial artist in the sense that he's going to go and train jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai and all this stuff. But at the same time, if he punches you, he's going to punch your head off, and it's going to be really exciting. Not saying anything bad about these 2 guys, but they're much more likely to provide us with a highlight reel knockout. But also, I think, this is also kind of an unfair thing, but it's the weight class. Fans, for whatever reason, like heavier fighters. That's why you see the lighter weights fighting in the WEC while the heavier weights fight in the UFC. And that's why you hear more about Brock Lesnar than about BJ Penn if you're not, you know, one of the more people that follows the sport. Mm-hmm. Guys like Chuck Liddell are always going to get paid more than guys like George St. Pierre just because Chuck Liddell is bigger and that's the way it works. It's not something that I agree with, but that's just the nature of the business, and I think that can be a big part of why these guys are on the main card while those 2 aren't. I'm kind of surprised, though, that moving up a match,
ooh,
Jim Miller and Dwayne Ludwig have made it to the main card while Martin Kampmann was on the Spike TV show. Not that there's anything wrong with these guys, but they're even lighter. They're at 155, and they're not super high on the rankings. Jim Miller is coming off of a win over Mac Danzig at UFC 100, which was in the prelims, and that's a good solid win, but it's not an outstanding win. Mac Danzig's on a 3-fight losing streak right now with that fight. And Dwayne Ludwig is one of those guys who's been around forever. He fought Genki Sudo in 2004, and he got beaten up by BJ Penn around the same time, and you know, he's been around forever. He's a solid hand, but
a UFC journeyman, perhaps. Just he's always been around.
He's always been around. He's not always been in the UFC. I think this is like his first or second fight back in the UFC after quite a long time away. But he's always been a journeyman, a gatekeeper type. He's never going to be the champion, but he provides exciting fights too. He's also another one of those guys who can stand and bang. Bang is his nickname. He can provide exciting fights, but he's not the best in terms of win percentage per se.
And the other brother, J-Lo, or Joe Lozon, he's going to be taking on Sam Stout. How robust.
Yeah, yeah, I was just looking at the picture of these two guys there.
Oh, yeah, look at them.
Looking real tough. J-Lo, the much more famous brother of D-Lo, you could call him, going to be fighting Sam Stout, and that should be a good one. Sam Stout likes to throw punches and tries to knock people out. And J-Lo training with BJ Penn, one of the best fighters in the world over there in Hawaii. This should be a good one. I would expect Lozon to win this one, mostly because I think he's more well-rounded. It's possible that he's going to get clipped on the way in, but I think he's probably going to take this one to the ground, and I think he can win it there. Also, Joe Lozon is one of the most fun people to follow on Twitter if you are a Twitterer. He does a lot of talking on the Twitter, and if you ask him questions, he is very likely to reply, unless you're asking him for his Xbox gamer tag, which he will not give out.
That's awesome. Nope, don't ask him that. We can ask him pretty much anything else. Sometimes a lot of these fighters have some pretty good information, sometimes, on Twitter. You know, you get a little insight in their training and diet habits and whatnot. Paul Daly and Dustin Hazlett.
Now, this is a fight that I'm really looking forward to. I am a big fan of Dustin Hazlett. I like grapplers who go for submissions. A lot of times you see a grappler just try to hold onto the guy and ride out the decision, or maybe try and pound him out. And while it's definitely part of the game, and there's definitely some strategy to it, you know, I like to see a guy who's willing to take some chances. And you know, not just try and ride his way to a boring victory. It's something that, like, Roy Nelson got criticized for a lot when he beat up Kimbo Slice. And some of the other wins that he got on the show on The Ultimate Fighter is he coasted his way to victory instead of trying to make things more interesting. Mm-hmm. And Dustin Hazlett is the exact opposite on the ground. He always is looking for submissions. He's a really tall, lanky guy at 170. He's 6'1". And, that allows him to go for some submissions. He's really into the rubber guard, and he pulled off a reverse armbar against Tandem McCroy, which is that's something my jiu-jitsu teacher showed me, and I remember like looking at my teacher like, why are you showing me this? This is going to be impossible to ever put somebody in, and to see that happen in a UFC was pretty impressive to me. And he's fighting against Paul Daly, who's the guy who beat up Martin Kampmann that we were talking about earlier with the kind of early stoppage. And, you know, he's a good striker. He's definitely up there, but from what I've gathered, he's really not that good on the ground. He lost to Jake Shields on the ground. So if you can take him down, he's certainly vulnerable as that. So this fight definitely has the striker versus grappler thing going on that.
And is that a usually very popular type match?
It's definitely something that I like. If you're talking about the most casual of fans, I think they usually kind of prefer the striker versus striker. And, honestly, I like the grappler versus grappler matches a lot, too, when you look at guys who are aggressive. Once again, a great example of that was Sakuraba versus Carlos Newton, which just almost looked like a sparring session, the way they're going for submission after submission after submission after submission. There was not a whole lot of defensive submission. It's just like, as soon as I'm escaping one, I'm looking for my own submission, and then all of a sudden, oh man, this guy's grabbing me and something. It's a really exciting fight to see if you've never seen it, and I really like those. But in terms of striker versus grappler, they're really easy to market, so I would say that they're probably pretty popular. And they're also, for the most part, fairly easy to predict if one guy has the edge in wrestling, for example, like... You know, Chuck Liddell was always, like, in striker versus grappler matches. You know, he'd fight Tito Ortiz. It's a striker versus grappler. And you think, well, who's going to win this? Is it going to be the striker or the grappler? And it's usually like, well, who's got the better wrestling? If Chuck Liddell can defend the takedown, then bam, it's going to be the striker. In this one, I don't really know that either of these guys has a huge edge in wrestling, but I'm going to give the nod to Dustin Hazlett. I think he's going to pull off a submission probably pretty early in the fight, either first round or second round.
That's fantastic. What match was that again that we should be looking for? That's
Dustin Hazlett versus Paul Daly. It's
yes.
The co-main event.
All right. And then moving on to the main event, the big span, Rashad Evans and then Thiago Silva.
Yeah, this is a really interesting fight to me. It's pretty hard for me to just flat out say, like, I think one guy is going to win. Because both of these guys have an outstanding record, with one exception, and that exception is the same exception for both of them, and that is Lyoto Machida. Both of these guys are undefeated, other than their run-in with Lyoto Machida, who knocked them both out senseless. So, obviously neither of these guys has a big hole in their game. Thiago Silva is an extremely aggressive Muay Thai guy, and he's got some good jiu-jitsu as well. Rashad Evans is a little more laid back in terms of aggressiveness. He's much more willing to let people come to him. He's kind of got the counter-striker thing going on, but he is a wrestler at heart, and he's been really working on his hands as of late and has gotten some pretty nice knockouts as a result of that. Knocked out Chuck Liddell, and unlike Shogun or Rampage, who, they got their TKO on Chuck Liddell, Rashad Evans made Chuck Liddell go to sleep for a significant amount of time. And also his knockout on Sean Salmon, which was a kick, actually, it was a head kick. He had Sean Salmon out for several minutes. So while striking is not Rashad Evans' forte necessarily, he has got some serious power. And I think Thiago Silva is going to have the edge standing up, probably, but he's really going to have to be careful standing up because, he lets something slip in and he can go to sleep. But I think Rashad Evans has got the advantage with the wrestling, and I don't think he's necessarily likely to put Thiago Silva away on the ground, but I think he can probably use the wrestling to keep Thiago off his balance and, put him on his back, score points and stuff like that. Like I said, it's hard for me to pick a winner for this one, but if there's a gun to my head on this one, I'm going with Rashad.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would happen for Thiago to win? Does he need to catch him in a submission or just get a good lucky punch?
Well, I don't think luck really has anything to do with it because he is a very good striker. He just actually knocked out Rashad Evans' training partner, Keith Jardine, in their last fight a few months ago. So there's been a little bit of trash talk because of that. But at the same time, Keith Jardine is the perfect opponent for a guy like Thiago Silva. Because Keith Jardine, he's a great fighter, but he's got a serious kryptonite in aggressive strikers. He's a very good fighter, but if you can hit him hard and fast and follow up on it, he's going to go to sleep every time. That's why he loses to guys who are lesser fighters like Houston Alexander or Vanderlei Silva, who is a fantastic fighter, but is also not the fighter that he was a few years ago, and Keith Jardine is his only win in like 6 or 7 fights now because, Keith Jardine just falls to guys like that, and Thiago Silva is just another guy that fits into that mold. So he's coming off of a win on like Rashad Evans, but I don't put a whole lot of weight into that win just because of the matchup. I think not a whole lot of people were going to give that one to Keith Jardine. Not that he's a lesser fighter once again, but just that it was a bad style matchup, and there's been some trash talk going on because of that. But I think Thiago Silva, he doesn't need to get lucky. He needs to work inside. He needs to be aggressive and have some good head movement. I don't know what exactly Rashad's game plan is going to be, and that's also going to be a big key. Greg Jackson is real good with coming up with game plans. Rashad Evans' coach, and he's one of the best in the business at that right now, and I'm sure he's going to try and work something to keep Thiago Silva guessing. But if Thiago can get inside, land some knees, land some good punches, he can put Rashad Evans away. Like I said, it's a really tough one for me to pick. But I think the tools that Rashad Evans has is going to be the difference. And also, Greg Jackson. It's really hard to count out Greg Jackson's guys just because he is so good at, like, finding holes in opponents' game plans and figuring out like an exact like set of instructions for this guy to do that will be the key to victory. It's never like it will definitely happen, but it seems to happen a lot more often than it doesn't happen.
So on a card that's been riddled with injuries and rescheduling fights and all that good stuff, is the card still strong? Are you going to be enjoying watching this pay-per-view?
Well, this card has certainly lost a lot of its name value. In terms of pay-per-view buys, I think it's really going to be hurt because there were a lot of guys that a lot of fans are going to recognize that aren't going to be here. But in terms of, like, if you're going to buy the show anyway, you're not going to be bored. I think it's still going to be a fun card. I'll be seeing it, and I think I'll be entertained. You never know. It could turn out to be incredibly boring. I could be totally wrong, but I think it's going to be a fun show.
Okay. Well, UFC 108, January 2nd, this Saturday on pay-per-view. We'll be watching it, and we'll give you all the details and our rundowns and opinions the next week. So let's go to Matt Pickley.
Yeah, I just want to give our boy Matt on the MMAtorch.com some props. He's been running the 100 Greatest Fighters of the Decade. Today being Monday, the 28th, we did number 4, Chuck Liddell. And, yeah, it's just been something that I've been reading for the last 3 months or so now. It's been 96 days in. And
you've kept up with this guy, too. He's been going through the top 100.
He's been doing it all the way since September, and it's been a great read. So, good on you, Matt.
Yay! All right, well, appreciate you hanging out with us. Follow us on Twitter. We also have a Facebook page. This is The Audio Choke.
I am Greg Rowland.
I'm Matt Collins, and we'll see you next time.
Joe Lozon is one of the most fun people to follow on Twitter if you are a Twitterer. He does a lot of talking on the Twitter, and if you ask him questions, he is very likely to reply, unless you're asking him for his Xbox gamertag, which he will not give out.